Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. This week, it's columnist and Albany bureau chief for the New York Daily News, Ken Lovett. He is one of the most observant people about our politics. And if he says it, it's going to make some news. It's terrific to have you here. Welcome back, Ken.
It's good to be back.
Okay, let's start with the news of the week. Former Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver. The trial begins. Preet Bharara brings Sheldon Silver to the Bar of Justice. What do we got?
Well, it's been interesting so far. We've had the doctor, the Silver is accused of basically using his office to enrich himself. In one case, they said he gave hundreds of thousands of dollars to a doctor who was researching melanoma cancer. And in exchange, the doctor sent referrals, clients, to the Silver's law firm. And
sure,
Silver pocketed the referral fees, millions of dollars worth. The doctor testified this week, and that he's really the standout witness that the prosecution, Preet Bharara, is bringing forward. And I'm not sure how it went over down there. On the one hand, he said that he felt he needed to get on Silver's good side by sending clients to his law firm. But on the other hand, he said there was no deal, and he was doing it because he felt that's the best way to get on his good side. So whether a jury sees that as corruption or not, I don't know.
Yeah, it's always seemed to me that in order to prove bribery, you got to get somebody recorded on a piece of tape that says, if you do this, then I'll do that. That wasn't done in this case.
No, it wasn't. And one of the things you're going to have, though, that's really an uphill battle for the former speaker is juries these days are in no mood to give the benefit of the doubt to politicians. And so, there are those who feel that regardless of what happens, there's a lot of circumstantial evidence that Silver could be convicted and his best chance is on appeal of getting it overturned. But, we'll see. There's still weeks to go before this trial ends. So,
well, former Senate President Joe Bruno, you, of course, know better than most, eventually, after years and years and years of fighting in the courts, one trial then another trial, ends up being found not guilty.
Yeah. And, that was after he was found guilty on a couple of charges. And then those charges were basically dismissed after the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in a separate case, but under the same code of law that convicted Bruno, that they kind of threw out that part of the law. So they retried Bruno, and after that, he was acquitted. But it was, like you said, it was years later and millions of dollars later.
Yeah. And in the meantime, Bruno got cancer. So, this is not an easy thing for anybody to go through. On the other hand, Bharara is getting a lot of credit for having moved the bar and having said, okay, even if it's a tough thing, we're going to bring these charges because we don't like the corruption and the stench coming out of Albany.
Yeah, and, it's funny because Silver's defense so far is basically, it's not corrupt. Everybody's been doing it this way. You may not like it. It may not look good, but it's not illegal. And, we've heard that before, and other people have used it and gotten convicted. But that's so far, their leadoff witness was an assemblywoman, Amy Paulin from Westchester County.
And why did they put her on the stand?
Well, they wanted her to talk about how Albany works, and did Shelley Silver, who was her speaker, tell you that he was involved in these different things? And she said no, and, she laid it out, and it wasn't looking good. But then Silver's attorneys got to her and basically brought out the fact that she has voted on things that impacted positively her companies that her husband is invested heavily in. And she was then, I didn't realize that. I'm going to have to take another look at that. But it was a good get for the defense, to lead off. They really tore her apart on the stand. And according to news reports, I wasn't down there. It was one of the few times you saw Shelley Silver actually smile during the first couple of days of the trial when they were tearing her apart.
When you get down to the basics of this, there's going to be somebody sitting on that jury, seems to me, who might be in a position to hang the jury. Even if they don't vote for acquittal, somebody might be sitting there who says, wait a second now, if this is the way it's always been done, then why are we sending this guy to jail?
Yeah, it could. And then, you know, then the prosecution would then have to say, do we want to go at it again? And, you know, they've been tenacious. They don't like to lose.
No. So there's an old saying that you can't beat the federal government when it comes to their accusations. It happens every once in a while.
Yeah, Joe Bruno being one of them.
Yeah, but it happens. And so let's assume for a second that Silver gets off. He's never going to be the speaker again, right?
No, he's already lost his reputation. He's already lost his job, you know, his primary job. Look, he wanted to set the record. He was a year away from setting the record of longest sitting speaker. So, you know, he lost his credibility. He lost his job. Now he's just trying to save, you know, stay out of prison, basically. That's his goal right now.
Let's talk a little bit about what's coming up next, because also on this sort of doubleheader, they have not only the speaker under indictment and facing trial, but we have the former president and majority leader of the New York State Senate, Dean Skelos, on trial for his life.
That is a perfect way to put it. It's a corruption doubleheader, the likes we have not seen in this state, where you've had two of the three major leaders, you know, the governor being the third one, being on trial at the same time, basically. You know, Skelos starts in the middle of the month. His is that he used his office to help his son, you know, that he basically put pressure on people who have state contracts or dealt with his office to get jobs for his son and, you know, no-show jobs. And again, we're going to see there's a lot of tape. They monitored Skelos.
I'm thinking this is an easier deal for the feds.
Yeah, although it's going to be interesting to see, because, again, just not knowing all the stuff the feds have, a lot of the stuff that we have seen come out from the wiretaps have been really salacious, but to me has been the least of what I would think would convict him. You know, it shows that his son is, you know, one of these spoiled ne'er-do-wells. You know, you hear him talking, throwing all his weight around, and do you know who my father is? And at one point, he was working for a company that would have benefited during Hurricane Sandy, and, you know, he made a joke to his father saying, oh, I hope it keeps on raining, this is good for business. And, you know, so it doesn't look good, but it's certainly not illegal to be a jerk.
But it is illegal, we think, for Skelos to trade getting the kid a job or helping the kid with somebody who can get something themselves.
Yes, and that's why I said, to me so far, the wiretaps are the most salacious. It's getting the most attention. But to me, the most dangerous thing for Skelos in terms of staying out of prison is just that, what people are going to say he did, what actions he took in exchange for official business to get his son jobs. And that's what the feds are going to have to prove. And you know, they think they can, and we'll see what they have.
You know, there's a certain fascination with the, as you say, with some of the salacious tapes that have been somehow leaked to the press, or the press has gotten a hold of. One of them is a conversation between young Skelos and his father concerning Andrew Cuomo and what they could do in terms of Cuomo's girlfriend. Could you set that up for us?
Yeah, it was during the budget process, and one of the things Dean Skelos is accused of is trying to help one of the companies in the budget process that was hiring Adam. So, you know, there's something there.
Adam's the son.
So at one point they were talking, and the governor, you know, they had the Moreland, and they were going after the outside income and all these things and wanted more disclosure. And, you know, the Dean Skelos and his son were talking about, Dean was saying, well, we're going to go after Sandra Lee, the governor's longtime girlfriend, celebrity chef. You know, basically, they put out a bill that infuriated the governor that would require, you know, significant others, non-spouses, to also disclose their outside income or their income information, their financial information, as a spouse would. And there's really a legitimate issue there to discuss. But in this case, we heard him say that he was going to use it to put pressure on the governor during the budget talks and you know, use it against the governor, which, you know, some would say is really hardball politics, which New York is known for. But to hear it so bluntly put on these tapes was fascinating.
Well, it is, Ken Lovett. But what's really interesting to me is, here's Cuomo with his reputation as having kept the Republicans in power in the Senate. You know, for those people scratching their heads and saying, well, but he's a Democrat. No, no, no. The way that this really works is that he and his father loved having the Republicans there, because then they were the policemen and they would hold up their hands and say to the Democrats in the assembly, no, you can't spend everything you want to spend, and we're going to put a stop to it, because Cuomo fashioned himself as a conservative type of Democrat in the Clintonian sort of model. So, you know, now you hear these two Republicans talking to each other on this tape, basically cursing Cuomo.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a shock that, you know, there's not a lot of love for the governor from Democrats or Republicans in Albany. They view him as a bully. They view him as someone they deal with and they have to deal with. I think they respect him politically, but I don't think there's a lot of love for him. So to know that behind the scenes they were trying to, you know, look at ways to weaken him as the governor has used things to try to weaken them. I mean, that's politics. But it, like I said, you don't often hear it so bluntly put. And the only reason we did were wiretaps from the feds that were made available as part of the record as we go forward with this trial.
Okay. So now let's, Ken Lovett, let's try this. There are three men in the room who make these decisions together. We're hearing testimony at the Silver trial. Nobody has really anything to say, except for Silver on one side. I've always said that, and Dean Skelos in that case, and when he was there, and the governor. Now, we know that Preparo was furious when the Moreland Act, which was appointed by the governor to go after corruption, was unceremoniously dumped in the middle. And we wonder why he did that. Barrara was furious, interviewed people on his staff, on the governor's staff, the people who were responsible for all calling in the plays, a great story that the governor had said that the commission was independent, and you did a great piece of journalism in which you pointed out that they were actually taking orders from the second floor. And so my question now, Ken, is this. Is Preparo done with the governor?
No. And in fact, it's almost like watching a cat play with a mouse. Because really, Preparo is the one guy the governor can't intimidate. He's the one guy he has no power over. And what we have seen is Preparo is now looking at a lot of stuff. And so far as we know, he hasn't found anything. He looked at the Moreland thing. I got to imagine a year and a half after looking at it, we would know something by now if there was anything on the Moreland, the pulling of the plug and all that. He looked at a committee the governor created, the Committee to Save New York, that was raising all this funds. It was really a lot of real estate people and others with business before the state that raised money in Cuomo's first year. And basically was running ads for the governor.
Yeah.
And he looked at that, and that was about a year ago. He subpoenaed again. We haven't seen anything. I can't say there's nothing there, but, you know, a year's a long time. We've seen Silver and Skelos indicted in less time. And now he's looking at the Buffalo Billions up in Buffalo, which is a signature economic development program for the governor. And now Preparo is looking at to see if there was any bid rigging. It's almost like he really wants to get the governor. He has him in his sights. And, you know, the governor's people say it's a fishing expedition. Barrara saying that he's going to go where things lead him. But it is interesting. And it did raise eyebrows when it was Preparo looking at the Buffalo Billions, given that it's in Buffalo and he's the U.S. attorney based in Manhattan. But of course, the U.S. attorney in Buffalo has his own conflict because his name is William Hochul. And if that name sounds familiar, it could be because Cuomo's new lieutenant governor is Kathy Hochul, and that's her husband, the U.S. attorney. So obviously he would have to recuse himself on any kind of investigation.
So here's what everybody's screaming at the radio.
I love New York.
Here's what everybody's screaming at the radio, Ken Lovett. They want me to ask you this. Let's assume for a second that both Dean Skelos and Shelley Silver are convicted and are off to jail. Would that be a time when the governor would be most likely to be in trouble with Preparo?
You know, part of me would say beforehand, only because if you're trying to cut a deal with Silver and Skelos, that's that you know, give up the governor, right? I don't know. I can't say. I don't know what they have. We know a little bit of what they're looking into. I'm sure we don't know everything they're looking into. And you would have thought, like I said, if it had anything to do with the Moreland and his handling of that and some of the other stuff, we would have seen something by now. If not the governor, at least some of his current and former top aides.
Okay.
But we have not seen that yet. So I don't know where it's heading with the governor. I know he's looking. I know he wants to find something if there's something there, but I don't know if he's found that yet.
Okay, Ken Lovett, here comes the lightning round, and we got to go quick to get all of this stuff in. There are two major candidates who want to run against Andrew Cuomo, the guy in Westchester County, and a congressman up here, Mr. Gibson, who is very popular in our area, who was on this airwave just a little while ago, who says he wants to run against Cuomo. Cuomo's a bully. And Gibson says he can run, even though I have to tell you, not many people know who he is.
No, I think Gibson would be a strong general election candidate.
Stronger than Astorino, who got wiped out the last time.
As a general election candidate, yeah, I think, look, he supported the governor's fracking ban, same-sex stuff. He's not as conservative on certain issues as Rob Astorino, the Westchester County executive. However, for a primary, a Republican primary, it's a more conservative wing of the party that tends to push the winner. And, there's questions whether Chris Gibson can raise enough money statewide. There's questions whether he can get the support of the county chairs, who really did like Astorino, and they appreciate what he did last year and seem willing to back him again in 2018. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, indeed. Andrew Cuomo takes another shot at his nemesis, Bill de Blasio, and says he wants to save New York City. Save it from what? From de Blasio?
That was the implication. He was talking recently to his campaign finance committee at an event, and he said that one of his priorities is to, quote, save New York City, according to people who were in the room. And they all took that to mean from Bill de Blasio. So the war continues.
So the State Ethics Commission, which many people have seen as a sort of do-nothing group, have push now to get tougher campaign donation regulations. Would that take an act of the legislature? And if so, would they do it?
No, it would not take an act of the legislature. It's a different way of going around it. Oddly, though, or whatever, not surprisingly, perhaps, it would mostly impact not the legislature, not Governor Cuomo, but the Attorney General Eric Schneiderman and Comptroller Thomas DiNapoli, because it would basically bar contributions from those who are under investigation or could be under investigation by an authority, or an audit, which would be the Comptroller. So the two people who don't have any representation on J. Cope, because the appointees to the board are the governors and the legislative leaders, they're the ones who would get hit hardest with this.
And just so in case you're from another planet, J. Cope is the Joint Commission on
Public ethics.
Public ethics,
or as some call it, J-joke.
J-joke, right. Okay, so does Andrew Cuomo run for a third term?
That's a good one. I was under the impression absolutely not. He's seen his third term what a disaster was for his father, for George Pataki, for Al D'Amato, for Ed Koch. Third terms are tough, Michael Bloomberg. But that said, he's doing a lot of stuff now that is putting him at least in a position to run if he chooses to. He's raising money. He's trying to win back the liberal part of the base. So I think I'm not as confident in saying no as I was maybe even 2 months ago.
Ken Lovett, I'm being hustled by the third party in this case, the Working Families Party, who desperately want to get on the air. What is their reputation right now?
They have a lot of problems both inside and out. They were really split last year. A lot of them who were not part of the system but were a part of the WFP wanted to back Zephyr Teachout for governor against Andrew Cuomo. But the powerful unions that fund the Working Families Party,
as well as the old guy, Bill de Blasio.
Well, right.
Who's probably sorry now.
Right. But they said go with Cuomo because especially for the unions and de Blasio, they have business with Cuomo. So it was a business decision more than it was anything else. So they're kind of split from the inside, and from the outside, the governor is freezing them out. He's doing a lot of what they want him to do, but they're not at the table for the most part.
To some degree, this is all beginning to smell very familiar. I'm so old that I remember the Liberal Party in New York. behaving exactly the same way.
Absolutely. And for them, it was, if you remember the Liberal Party, they used to back Rudy Giuliani. I mean, it was a transactional party. And I think the Working Families Party has, they talk a good game, but in a lot of people's eyes, it's been very transactional because they have gone with a lot of the major party candidates, you know, including Cuomo last year at the urging of de Blasio.
They had a shot. If they had gone for teach-out, which many of their members wanted to, they might be regarded with a little bit more appreciation than they are now.
They would be, but the problem for them is, and what they were worried about, is you have to pick up 50,000 votes on a governor's race every 4 years to keep your guaranteed ballot line.
Sure.
So, you know, having Cuomo on the Working Families Party, they got their 50,000 and they're still a party, you know, on, a formal party.
Well, I would argue with you that they would have done even better had they gone the other way, but who knows? So there's this thing I'm fighting with my very good friend, Gerald Benjamin, Professor Benjamin at New Paltz, about a constitutional convention. My position has been, it offers a certain amount of hope, but the same old guys will be calling the shots, they'll be electing their friends, it'll be a big waste of money.
I think you have a better shot this year of getting it done than you did the last time it came
up. Okay, well, let's assume it gets done. Will anything get done in the convention?
That's a good question. I tend to agree with you. It's going to be a lot of the same people get elected and people connected to the leaders and how much they're going to want to change things. But I will put it this way, what's the harm at this point? You know, Albany is so broken that if maybe this represents even a glimmer of hope, if it does, it does. And the voters are going to have to decide on what is put forward anyway. So why not at least give it a shot?
Well, yes, but the problem will be that people will vote for it for exactly the reason you say. It's a glimmer of hope. But those hopes will certainly be dashed. What are they going to do? Put term limits on the legislature? They're not going to do that.
So cynical, so cynical.
You are so right. We've been around for a long time. So we had some elections very quickly in New York State. Down in the southern tier, we had an interesting state Senate election.
Yeah, the Republican Ashkar beat Barbara Fiallo, who's the governor's choice. She's a former county exec out there, but he not only beat her, he's the first time running for office. She's won in that area a number of times, but he trounced her. He may get 80% of the vote, which really raised a lot of eyebrows, because as Republican as upstate is, the Binghamton area where that seat is, it's something like, I think, registered 39% Republican, 33% Democrat. And it's gone for a lot of Democrats. It's gone for Hillary Clinton. It's gone for
her.
And gone for Andrew Cuomo and obviously voted for Fiala in the past. So to get 80% for the Republican, she ran a terrible race. The governor basically did nothing for the Senate.
Even though he said he was going to help.
Even though he said. But you know what? The Senate Democrats saw the writing on the wall and they gave her $18,000 and then washed their hands of her, too.
Wow. And on other results, we only have 2 minutes, pretty much as expected. People maintain their own.
Yes, except Long Island, there were some interesting races. The Nassau County DA's race, the Democrat beat the Republican by a lot, which was surprising. And the longtime Oyster Bay town supervisor, who's 9 terms, is neck and neck. It's still not decided. It's going to go to the paper ballots. So that is leaving Democrats with hopes that maybe they can break the Republican machinery for next year's state Senate races.
So what's going on Long Island all of a sudden that, you know, that they are willing to vote for Democrats?
Corruption. Madeline Singus, the Democrat who won for DA, has said she's going to go after public corruption. She, her opponent, she kept tying to a lot of the corruption, including Dean Skelos and some of the other issues that are out there. And the Oyster Bay town chairman, Vendetto, whose son is a state senator, by the way, his administration has been tied to a lot of corruption as well. And so that really people seem to have had enough.
So what do the tea leaves look like? We got 1 minute in terms of the Democrats taking over the Senate.
You know, I think it's they've got a chance. You know, they have a chance of winning the 1 or 2 seats they need to have a majority of Democrats. Then the question is, can they strike a deal to form a coalition with the independent Democrats that broke away from
the traitors?
Them? Yeah, there's 5 of them, 5 independent breakaway Democrats.
Yeah.
I'll let you use that other word. But they have a chance. And, you know, in a presidential election year, they're feeling confident. The Republicans, you know, obviously are saying what happened in the southern tier, they hope to duplicate elsewhere.
Well, if Hillary's running for president in New York State, An awful lot of people are going to come out and vote.
And what will the governor do? You know, he could really impact, actually, on Long Island. If he really wanted to go in for the Democrats, Long Island is still one of the areas in New York City where he is very popular.
Yes.
So if he wants to go in and help the Senate Democrats, something he has yet to show he wants to do, but if he follows through on that promise, then it could be interesting next year.
It's always wonderful to talk with our Ken Lovett, Albany Bureau Chief for the New York Daily News. Ken, thanks for showing up. You are so knowledgeable about all of it, and we appreciate it.
Thank you. Be well.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.